At least half of all conversations are made up of the dynamic skills of listening. When you listen better, you improve the quality of conversations. In turn, better conversations lead to better relationships. Now is the time to learn about radical listening. Hello, and welcome to this special episode of the Coaching and Education Podcast. I'm your host, Richard Reid, and today I'm in conversation with two great minds on the subject of listening. Dr. Robert Biswas-Diener and Professor Christian van Nieuwburg both have extensive experience in the field of positive psychology and coaching, and together they have co-authored their latest book called Radical Listening. Gentlemen, it's such a pleasure to have you join me on the podcast today.
Thank you so much, Richard. We're looking forward to this conversation too.
Yeah, it's great to be here.
Fantastic. I'd like to start, gentlemen, by actually thanking you both for the opportunity to read through a few of the chapters in advance of this conversation. So I have a number of questions that I'd love to put to you both. And I want to start with potentially a fairly straightforward one. So what inspired you to write Radical Listening? Was there a particular moment or maybe experience that clarified the importance of listening as a radical act?
Take it away, Christian.
Well, I'm not sure Robert and I have the same story here. So I will start off. Thank you. For me, it's interesting because this book project came out of a desire to work with and learn from Robert. So for a little while now, I've been thinking, what sort of projects might Robert and I work on together? And so that was my initial interest in any project. And I think it just happened that both Robert and I have both a personal interest in listening well, but also a professional interest because we're both coaches and we're both people who train people to become coaches. So I think that was the perfect moment to say, both interested in this. I certainly felt I had a lot to learn by working with Robert on this kind of project.
Fantastic, Robert.
Yeah, and not dissimilar to my own memory, and thanks for the kind words. This was an unusual book in that I think typically an author is pregnant with an idea and wants to give birth to something. You know, I'm just so passionate about telling my readership about X topic or Y topic. And that, I'm not sure that happened here. I wasn't like, you know, ever since I was a kid, I wanted to write about listening. Instead, what happened here was Christian and I were just meeting largely during the pandemic, just via Zoom, just having wide-ranging conversations. And we recognized that we had very complementary strengths, that we collaborated very well. We wrote a couple of academic articles. And it was almost a case of, let's write something, but it doesn't matter what we write. I mean, sure, we're not going to write a book on how to, you know, bake the perfect pizza. It's going to be something that's going to be closer to our area of expertise. And as coaches and researchers and people interested in well-being and connection, listening sort of bubbled to the top as a good candidate topic. But really, it was a passion for working with one another that drove the project.
Fantastic. So I'd imagine then there's going to be a significant element of you folks listening to each other when it comes to that relationship, which is a lovely way to start the conversation off. Now, the title suggests that listening can be radical. So how does radical listening differ from conventional listening? And why is this distinction so significant today?
It's a bit precarious to call a book radical listening because people will interpret the word radical like, okay, bring it. That's what a bold title. I want you to shock me, you know, pull the carpet out from under me. And that's not exactly what we mean with radical listening. We're not looking to shock people or looking to say something that you never in a million years would have thought of. Instead, radical listening is just sort of a deeper listening. It extends listening. If you think about what we all know, active listening, sort of this traditional mode of listening, it has some skills in it, like you summarize what the person says, you ask clarifying questions, you make sustained eye contact. But largely, active listening promotes comprehension. Are you effectively communicating with one another? And I think radical listening shifts that focus to connection or alignment? Are you both having the same conversation? Are you giving as a listener what the speaker is asking for in the conversation? And that's a subtle distinction, but I think a powerful one.
Yeah. Christian, any thoughts?
Yeah, I think I agree. The idea of radical really landed for me when Robert actually sent out on LinkedIn, he sent out a survey saying, look, which of these subtitles do you think would be best for the book? And one of them got like 80%. It was by far the most popular subtitle. And these were subtitles that we'd come up with working with our publisher, Barrett Kohler. And that's when it hit me, Richard, and the subtitle was The Art of True Connection. And for me, that's what's radical. The purpose of radical listening is to build connection. Purpose of radical listening is to strengthen relationships. So I think that's what's radical about it, is that by focusing on one's intention, we can use it not only to communicate, but also to bring people together.
Yeah, I like that idea of connection. And you've mentioned, obviously, the word relationship. So when we think about, essentially, the power of listening, in this case, radical listening, in the opening chapter, you highlight the decline in trust and the rise of loneliness. And you say that that's globally. So how can radical listening then help reverse these trends in many ways our increasingly fragmented world?
You know, that was probably another driver for writing this book, was just the sense of disconnection. And, you know, it's interesting. I'm going to hark back to our earlier comment. I felt it during the pandemic, you know, that sense of professional loneliness, perhaps, of, you know, there's other people like me out there. I used to be able to interact with them pretty regularly. That's not happening right now. And so there was that hunger, I would say, a hunger for being connected. And, you know, when I think back to how those conversations took place, there was definitely a lot of listening happening between myself and Robert. It wasn't like I was waiting for our weekly meetings with a ton of things that I wanted to say to Robert. It was actually just that sense of connection that came from us talking about things that were of shared interest. But I want to bring in a word that's really important for me, Richard, and it probably doesn't appear in the text as much as I probably would have liked it to appear, because this has only come up subsequently, but really the idea that radical listening is a respectful way of listening. It's really at the heart of respectful interactions. And I really felt that that's something that preceded us starting the book. But I would say, Robert, I don't know if you feel the same, that during the writing process, because this is, when you get the book and read it, you'll see there aren't chapters that you'll say, oh yeah, Robert wrote this one, Christian wrote that one. My hope is that it's going to be pretty difficult to tell. And that's because I think we were able to listen to each other well. What do you think, Robert?
Yeah, definitely. And I actually think that you're a terrific collaborator in this respect. There were times when you're just very straightforward with me. I'll give you an example. I wrote an introduction to one of the chapters and Christian just said, take it out. You know, it just, let's be honest, like it just didn't land for me. And as an author, you want to just hear that every word you write is brilliant. But he was so available to tell me, like, here's why it didn't work. I don't think it's a big deal that it didn't work. I just think we can come up with something more powerful. And almost like the trust in me, like, Robert, I think you can do better. Like, I'm not just saying you're bad at writing intros. I think you're better than this at writing intros. And it was such a respectful pushback that it lit a fire under me to rise to the occasion. And I found that time and again with Christian. And it's a willingness, I think, not to have to be right, but just to have an opinion that's worth considering.
So in many ways, the experience of, well, writing the book together is an example of the benefits of radical listening, because you were living it out in many ways. And that's something where, I mean, would you say that, I mean, transform is a big word, but, you know, transforming a relationship, certainly improving a relationship, was your experience of radical listening through the process. Would that be accurate?
Yeah, absolutely. I'd also like, if you don't mind, to tell a short little story that has to do with sort of the more global idea of just listening to one another. Not far from my house, there are two homes, and these homes are kind of famous in our neighborhood and in our town for the battle they have historically and for years now through the flags they put up. So one homeowner is very conservative, another homeowner seems to be very liberal, and they're both adorning their house with a million flags telling what their political position is or what they stand for. And I drive by these homes every day and I just think, what must it be like to be these neighbors? Like, do they just hate one another? Is it just so awkward when they meet each other going out to get the mail? Well, yesterday, the local news channel did a profile on them, and it turns out that they're great friends and that they're super respectful of one another, and they check up on one another. They both recognize that if you put out a political flag, you're making a statement. They want to make sure that no one's threatening them. They're not getting any public backlash from it. They really care about one another. And it was such a great example to me of people who aren't just stereotyping, but who are trying to interact. And that's the connection that Christian spoke about. Like, if you come with enough humility to say, I want to listen to you, you have an opinion worth listening to, I don't have to agree with it, but I can listen. That seems to be a first step, albeit a very difficult one.
So radical listening in many ways opens the doors to, you know, breaking down barriers, maybe getting around assumptions that we make. Well, quite often we make assumptions before we listen, because quite often we haven't given the other person an opportunity to share their opinion or speak or give their view. So that's a lovely story and will resonate with I'm sure quite a lot of our listeners. When it comes to the challenges to listening, gentlemen, many of us, and I include myself in this list, struggle with distraction. Okay, now it might be digital devices, or I know in my case, just busy lives, and I'm sure you can relate to this as well. How can we practically overcome these challenges to cultivate deeper connections through listening?
I think it's such a great question, Richard. And you said one of your barriers is distraction, but I'm not experiencing that right now, Richard. You're fully attentive. You seem incredibly interested. You've already done some pre-reading. So this is, for me, an example. I mean, you as a podcast host are doing the radical listening we're talking about. And if we were to unpick, what are the things you're doing? Well, it was preparing for it. It was thinking about your intention, planning for it. You've created a distraction-free space right now. And I know many of the listeners of the GCI podcast will be educators. And, you know, educators face huge challenges. And we talk about some of these challenges in our book. But distraction, we've all got that. And I would argue that the fact there's so much distraction means that when we do listen in this way to people, they value it more. That's probably one of the reasons why it's such a great way of connecting. The other one, and there's so many, but I'll focus on two that may be relevant for our listeners. The other is perceived lack of time. That's something that comes up again and again. And the reason I think it's a barrier is if I go into a conversation thinking, I don't have enough time for this, that's going to come across as being impatient, wanting the conversation to end, trying to keep things as short as possible. So for me, radical listening, even when it's done in 5 minutes, it creates this sense of, I have time for you. And I think, you know, educators, coaches, people listening to this will know how powerful it is when we are listened to. And I do think there's an opportunity for educators, educational leaders, to find ways to show other people, you're valuable. I have time for you. And the challenge is, of course, we're trying to create that impression of, I've got time for you, when everything else is telling us there isn't enough time. So that's another huge challenge.
I'd love to build on that, Christian, just with a couple of examples. I think one of the worst things in a conversation, if you're trying to tell someone something, you want to get a point across, is for them to say something like, oh, walk with me because I've got a meeting in a minute, or come with me. And they're just very overtly signaling to you, I kind of don't have time for you. My mind is already elsewhere. I'm willing to sort of squeeze you in at best. And it feels quite dismissive. But if you just turn to a person and you say, okay, we have 2 minutes. Not we only have 2 minutes, but wow, we have 2 minutes. And to treat any number of minutes you have like that's an abundance. And so here's a quick little mental trick that I do. I imagine however many minutes it is, how would I feel if I were on hold with customer service? So if it was a 4 minute wait time and I had to be on hold, it would probably feel like an excruciatingly large amount of time. And so then if I only have 4 minutes for you, Richard, I flip that and say, I do have 4 minutes for you. We actually can cover a fair amount of ground in 4 minutes. It feels abundant. I have 4 minutes. Lay it on me. And I think it allows you to be a little more mindful and a little bit more respectful.
Exactly right. That's a great example. And there will be many of those moments in the lives of educators and coaches, of those little moments of interaction. And I like the idea of saying, I've got a few minutes now, or if it's going to take longer, we can allocate some time. So this idea of saying, you are important to me, I can give you this amount of time now, or if longer is needed, we can schedule something for later. And I agree with Robert, probably the worst case scenario is, you know, I'm sending this email, just tell me, I'm listening while I'm sending this email. Things like that, I think, are the opposite of radical listening. So it's interesting that probably the best way I can describe radical listening is by describing its opposite. And its opposite is, I'm trying to say something to somebody, it's obvious that they're not listening. And if the listeners of this podcast can just cast their minds back, have they ever been talking about something and it's clear the other person's not listening? If they remember what that felt like, radical listening should make you feel the opposite, which is, this person appreciates me, this person values and respects me, and this person is interested in what I have to say.
I think that's particularly helpful for our listeners, as many will be educators and living in just very, very busy, you know, scenarios. I mean, when you talk about that talking and walking, I think about the West Wing. You know, every conversation is on the go, a bit like a school. But one interesting thing you both mentioned was that even if there are just 5 minutes and both parties know there are only 5 minutes, you can still, through radical listening, convey to that other person that this is five very important minutes. And you have my undivided attention. So I think we're never going to open up 30-minute, 45-minute windows in schools for conversations. Unlikely. There are still going to be 2, 3, 5-minute windows. But through radical listening, you can still have so much of a better conversation and build better relationships. If I'm getting that right, gentlemen, would that be accurate?
Spot on.
Fantastic. If we think about, and this element really intrigues me, you have a chapter in there exploring the dual nature of quiet. How can we use silence effectively in conversations, especially, and everybody will be able to relate to this, when it might feel uncomfortable because we're not used to it, or counterintuitive? What are your thoughts?
Actually, there's two parts to quieting. And actually, you know, just to draw the curtain back a little bit for your listeners, Richard, Robert and I talked a little bit about the title of this chapter. We were thinking, is it quieting? Is it quietening? So we were kind of exploring what is it we were talking about. But the way I remember it, we want to create an environment of quiet. And that comes back to what you were saying, Richard, about to minimize distraction. So we want to create an environment where there's relatively less external noise or distraction. That's probably going to help the other person feel listened to because they have our undivided attention. But I'm going to hand over to Robert to say a little bit more about the idea of inner quiet that we explored.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many facets to the idea of silence. But one of the big problems and obstacle to listening that happens in a conversation is that you as the listener are already loading what you're going to say. You sort of do a little bit of mind reading. I think, Richard, I know where you're going with this. So I've already got my response and I'm paying attention to how I'm going to form my response. And when that happens, we're not listening. We're actually doing some mental pre-talking, if you will. So I'll give you an example of how to circumvent this. And when I train coaches, one of the things I train just by way of listening is save your question until the person says the very last thing they're going to say, and then ask about that. So don't ask about the first thing they say, just whatever the last sentence they say, then form your question about that thing. And it forces you to not jump in, to not preload content or a response. In addition to that, I think starting with silence as a listener gives you time to start tracking not only what is being said, but the why it's being said. So if Christian comes to me and he says, oh my gosh, Robert, I just got such bad feedback on a training I did or something like that, I don't want to jump in yet because I don't exactly know what Christian wants from me. He might want me to reassure him, oh no, Christian, you're a great trainer. Don't worry about it. This is just a one-off. He might want some problem solving or feedback. Oh, well, Christian, actually, that might be accurate. I've noticed this about you as well, and I think there's a solution, but I don't yet know. And so I just want to be as silent as possible so it gives me an opportunity to calibrate. And that's where that alignment comes from, to just figure out what is it Christian is asking of me, the listener.
Yeah, I like that idea of calibration for the listener. Because quite often we would talk in the coaching field about holding the silence for the coachee to allow them to think. And Nancy Klein's a lovely quote in her book, Time to Think. The next thing that I say, you know, might be less important than the next thing you might think. So quite often we're thinking about the coachee, but there you're talking about calibrating for the listener. And I think we as listeners, as coaches, we need to make the most of the pause. You know, and capitalize on that time when it used the word calibrates, and I think that'll resonate with other folks. Am I getting that right, gentlemen? What are your thoughts?
I like what you're saying. So any listeners right now who are coaches, they're experienced with many of the things we're talking about. And here's another motivation for our book is that in coach training programs, we do talk about the use of silence and we do reflect on the idea of the inner game, what's going on in our minds. But it's not something that's generally available. And so I think one of the things I'm most excited about when the book becomes available on March the 25th is sharing, it's almost like a secret that coaches have, is that one way to build connection is to really listen intently. And so that's one angle of this. The other angle I really like about calibrating. If we were to go in and say, well, what are we calibrating? You know, what is it we're trying to? It's actually what we talk about in our book as optimal matching. And what we're trying to calibrate is that our response meets the needs of the person we're talking to. So that those few moments of quiet at the beginning when we're kind of just listening is helping us to determine, just like Robert said, well, what's the type of listening that's going to be most helpful for the person I'm listening to? So, yeah, I think that's a great way of thinking about it.
Yeah, I love that. I love that phrase, using the silence to meet the need of the other. Because ultimately, you know, in a conversation, if we're listening, and correct me if I'm wrong, it's all about the intention behind our listening. You know, why are we putting time into listening? So if we're there as a coach, because obviously our listeners are in that field, we're trying to meet the need of the other, and we need to take time to figure out what that need is. And what better way than through a little bit of pause for the coach? So that's been very helpful. Robert, you're nodding there. Do you want to add something in?
I do. Good noticing. yeah, I think this is one of the things that makes radical listening radical. I think there is a sense in traditional listening that listening is monolithic. It's one thing. If I can be mindful in the moment, just be quiet, I'll hear all the stuff you say, I understand it, and that's what listening is. But in radical listening, we talk a little bit about listening for purpose. And you might want, like, as a listener, what am I trying to accomplish through my listening? Am I trying to learn something? Am I trying to validate someone? Am I trying to entertain someone? Am I trying to set up problem solving? And we argue that those are all very distinct forms of listening. And the reason why is that whatever your intention is in listening, it guides your attention. So if you come to me and say, I just went through a terrible breakup, I might be listening with more empathy, a little more kind of looking to validate you. And so I'm going to be paying attention to things like your emotions, your facial expression, your body posture. But if you come to me and you're like, wow, Robert, I've got this terrible, complicated problem to figure out, I might be less looking at your frustration. I kind of get that right away. And more listening for sort of keywords, processes, vital components that we might end up discussing. So what you think you're doing as a listener is entirely parsing apart which aspect of the conversation you're paying attention to. And I think that's great. It makes listening more targeted.
I love that phrase, and folks will pick up on that. So your intention guides your attention. A lovely thing to think about, you know, well, as a coach, but just in general, when you're talking to colleagues, friends, family, that idea of your intention guiding your attention. If we move through to something, again, slightly different this time, towards the questioning side of things. Okay, so let's say we're listening extremely well. We're using the pause, or we're making the most of that. You have a chapter in there where you describe questioning as central to listening. So what role do questions play in radical listening? How can we ask better questions to encourage more meaningful dialogue?
You know, I'm going to include questioning, asking questions, and interjecting, which is another one of the skills that we talk about. The fact that we think listening includes asking questions and even interrupting. And like Robert was saying, it really depends on your intention. Now, if somebody's come to you with exciting news and they're really excited about something that's about to happen, jumping in and you being excited and you interrupting, that could actually energize the person and make them feel, yes, Christian really gets this. They're also excited. They can't wait to get a word in. So I think that's another reason we're talking about this being a slightly different form of listening, radical listening, because in most conversations about listening, you'd be saying no interruptions at all. So that's one angle. And that's kind of how I see the power of questions. So for me, one of the things about questions that we ask is that it can show that, one, we're very interested and curious. It also allows us to lead in some places the attention, you know. So if it were a problem-solving conversation, asking questions about, well, what happened, who are the people involved, it shows that we're right there, aligned and calibrated, as it were, with them. And getting a question wrong can break connection. So if I've come to Robert for some empathy to say, you know what, I've had the pneumonia and I've had this cough for 2 weeks, and Robert were to go straight into problem solving by asking questions like, have you been to the doctor? Are you taking a lot of liquid? The questions might be well-intentioned, but there's a kind of a disconnect, because that's not what I want. So if Robert were asking me more about how you're feeling right now, are you able to sleep, those questions show me that he's with me in the conversation. So that's why we think getting the questions right is part of radical listening. Robert?
Yeah, I think that questions and interjecting are a little bit counterintuitive as aspects of listening, because they're actually behaviors, and in both cases you're speaking sort of technically rather than listening. But I view every question you ask as an opportunity. You're inviting more listening. You're saying, I'm about to tee you up to talk more so that I can listen more. And that's really sort of, you could view questions as greasing the wheel of listening, of conversation.
I like that idea. I'm going to throw in not a curveball, but another thought here, gentlemen, because it strikes me over the years as a coach, continually developing those skills. I haven't got there yet, so continually developing those skills, questioning being one of those most difficult ones, where you're spending a lot of time thinking about a great question. And you're listening and you're trying to ask a question that's going to be most appropriate. Can you, as a coach, wrestle with a question during a conversation with another person? Can you start and change, you know, in an open, honest way? It's come to mind. I would love to hear your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I have some thoughts since I train loads of coaches. One of the things I see, especially in novice coaches, is sort of this think out loud questioning process in which they work themselves to a question. They know they want to ask a question, but at the beginning of their turn to speak, they don't yet have it. And it kind of looks like, well, in the context of what you just told me about managing your entire team, I guess what I'm curious about is some of the dynamics, or rather maybe the communication style. And it just kind of goes on and on. And it's like hard for the speaker to keep that thread. I suggest a couple of things. Just be transparent. Sometimes when I'm coaching someone, I might say something like, there's a question sort of percolating, but I don't know it yet. Just give me a second. How would you describe the communication between you and this person? Right? And just giving yourself a little bit of time to just come up with a fully formed question. I think it's just better communication. And I also think that coaching is a very forgiving endeavor, and that you might start with one question. You might say, how's your communication with this other person? Wait, strike that. How would this person describe your communication? And you just kind of realize, ooh, that's going to be a more provocative question, a little more power to it. And I think you have the ability to kind of backtrack or rescind. You have a good relationship with the person. So if you're not just doing sort of the textbook open-ended question, there's some leeway for that.
When it comes to the whole area of listening and conflict, then this is where it gets very interesting. So given the polarization in society, you know, which we know about, how can radical listening be applied, let's say, in situations where there's an element of conflict, or use a phrase, disagreement, essentially to foster understanding and maybe a bit more cooperation? I'd love to hear your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I mean, I've been thinking about that a lot. Our book, you know, is coming out soon, so we're being asked in interviews around questions like this. And I'm delighted. I'm delighted that we're connecting radical listening to some of those intractable problems that are out there, the disagreements. And I think I want to be careful to say we're not positioning radical listening as the silver bullet. It's not going to solve everything. But I do think it's the starting point. It's the beginning of starting to address something. And what we would say from the radical listening point of view is it's really about the intention. If the intention is we have a problem or we have a disagreement and I am interested in your view, I think that can be the start of dialogue. And in my experience, the kind of listening we're talking about, as I've mentioned, it builds connection. It builds relationship. So we would argue that radical listening is a great starting point for those situations where both parties or all parties would have a chance to be listened to, valued, and respected. You can see how intention is so important. This isn't going through the motions. It isn't saying, okay, we're going to have to sit and listen to this other person. I think the starting point is it's so important that we can make progress that as the starting point, I want to really try to understand where are you coming from? What's important for you? What are the things you're trying to protect? And I think taking that stance increases the chance of dialogue, and there's going to be tough conversations further down the line. But for me, the hope is that this would be a starting point.
Super. Robert, any thoughts?
I'll just add an example that I think is a powerful example. It's a non-political example. It comes from criminal justice. And there are a number of programs in countries that are essentially victim and offender reconciliation programs where they get the perpetrator of a crime and the survivor of that crime together to discuss the crime. And already that's fraught with difficulty. You have a very particular relationship between the parties there. But it's both people expressing an interest to engage in this dialogue. And that's a critical first step. And when they come together, typically, the offender has the opportunity to develop empathy by really listening to how their actions affected this other person. And it's a really tough way to listen to someone because of the content involved. But one of the research that comes out of this is that it lowers recidivism, that people do, in fact, take more responsibility and develop more empathy. And by the same token, the survivor of the crime tends to feel less victimized because they also hear a little bit more about the backstory of the criminal and kind of understand things in a little bit more context. And it ultimately, when it's at its best, can lead to a kind of healing. But I think it's a very, very difficult process that requires a lot of safety and a lot of positive intention.
Yeah. It's interesting. Both of you mentioned a phrase that were almost word for word. Christian, you used the phrase, I'm interested in your view with your example. And then Robert, you talked about expressing an interest in the other. So very, very similar response there, which I think is really helpful. And in many ways, it's a bit like, Robert, your neighbors, you know, where there are differing flags, but I'm expressing an interest in your view, in your opinion. I think when you can get two people or two parties to that point, where there's a genuine expression of interest in wanting to listen to the view of the other person, then, Christian, you used the word, it's the beginning of developing relationships and building connections. And if I can work with that same theme of beginnings and maybe, I suppose, broadening things right out, you know, into society, if we're thinking about building a listening culture, so we're moving just beyond the individual now, so we're thinking about, I suppose, organizations, you could say families, you could say communities. At that size, at that scale, how can we maybe start to, is the best way of putting this, adopt radical listening as a cultural norm? Start to use the word beginning.
I would wave the flag of intellectual humility. It's one of the topics that is my favorite these days. I think it is the thing that separates great coaches from good coaches. And I think it's useful for people in all sectors, basically. And intellectual humility is a little bit different than its cousin, humility. Humility is just not thinking that you have inherently but more worth than another person. Intellectual humility, by contrast, is the idea that you recognize how limited your own thinking is. That you can have values, you can have strong opinions, but that by your very nature, you have biases, you have prejudices, you can change your mind, you don't know everything, and that the people you're talking to, if you just kind of assume they're just as smart as you are, and that they have a right to their own opinions and values, and that they also have biases and limitations, the kind of humility that that fosters leads to better conversations, because you become more open to hearing another person out. Not that you have to be persuaded or agree with them at any time, but that you just know they have a right to think they do, the way they do, just as you have a right. And so your lived experience and their lived experience are on equal footing. And I think that's a great foundation. And if we can teach that in schools, in particular, through critical thinking, through the understanding of cognitive processes, through the understanding of the learning process, and instill that desire to learn, that's a great place to start.
Fantastic. Christian, any thoughts?
Yeah, you've already mentioned one of the books that that's had the biggest impact on my listening. Probably is Time to Think by Nancy Klein. So that's a great place to look at as well. I mean, she talks about listening environment and thinking environment. So that's one great place. The other book that came to mind is Humble Inquiry by Edgar Schein. And he's talking about in organizational context. So this idea of humility and of inquiry and curiosity and openness. I think those are important things. To be more practical, I guess, in organizations, creating opportunities for listening so that people have a chance to share their views, lots of opportunities for that. People role modeling, radical listening, I think, is a helpful way to support it. And, I think it ties into we care and respect for everybody's opinions here. That kind of explicit message that around here, we really care what people think. We want to hear what you have to say. And I think that message being made continually is important. Now, if I think about the opposite of intellectual humility, it's certainty. You know, it's that very dogmatic, this is the way things have to happen, this is what we do here. I think that can get in the way of creating listening cultures. You know, that idea of, and it's logical, Richard. This is the why it's so tough, because if I know something for sure, and I'm 100% certain, I have no doubts in my mind, it makes sense that I'm not open to hearing other people's views, because I've got this figured out. I know this. And like Robert said, in my experience with coaches, the best coaches are those that are acknowledge that and are always learning and will say things like, you did, Richard, at this conversation, which is, hey, I'm learning all the time. I'm developing all the time. I think I do this well, but I can do even better. So maybe another way of thinking about it is that those cultures that are open to even better are more likely to be listening cultures.
I like that idea, open to even better. I'm writing that down, Christian. I'm underlining it. I've one more question for you, gentlemen, and Robert, you've almost given me an answer without realizing it in your previous answer, and I'm going to share it here because I think it's a lovely thought, that idea of recognizing the limitations of your own thinking. My question is, I suppose it's more of a call to action. If listeners could take just one principle or one practice from the book and implement it literally today, or whenever they finish reading it, setting it down, what would you recommend as the most impactful first step? So I'm removing this option from you, but I still love it. Recognize the limitations of your own thinking. Is there anything beyond that? Let's take that as read, that you would say, here's a good first step.
Yeah, I would, in the coming days, coming weeks, just experiment around with this for anyone who's listening. Pay attention to what it feels like to be listened to. When you go into a conversation and you're just like, wow, this person really gets me or really hears me, or they're really giving me what I was hoping for. Just let that, just embody that and let it sink in and be like, this is what great listening feels like on the receiving end as the speaker. Wow. That, I think, in turn, will give you the motivation to pass that gift along to others.
Lovely. Passing the gift along to others. Christian, any thoughts?
Yeah, I like the metaphor of the gift, because when it's done well, radical listening is a gift. You know, you're giving the gift of attention. You're giving the gift of connection. So my thing would be that, of course, we've kept our conversation mostly to professional context. And I know that most of your listeners will be probably thinking in those contexts as well. And of course, you know, what I would want for every student in every school is for them to say, I had a teacher who really, truly listened to me. That's what I would want. But my challenge for listeners is, what about at home? What about with your friends? What about with family? You know, so my invitation to you is to take this idea of going into listening interactions with a clear positive intention and bringing that into those kind of personal relationships. And the reason I suggest this is that with those personal relationships, things might have fallen into a bit of a pattern. Oh, this is how we listen to each other. This is how these interactions are. And I'll share a personal anecdote, if that's okay. When I was first learning about listening in order to become a coach, and I realized, gosh, that's the thing I need to be better at. If I'm ever going to be a coach, I need to listen better. I realized that. I was doing all of this to be better professionally, and I was starting to use it in my coaching practice. And then one day I caught myself when I came home. It'd been a busy day. We talked about these barriers before, hurdles. Been busy, it'd be pretty intense. And got home, and my son came back from school. He was only about 12 at the time. And he said, oh, you know, this thing happened at school. And I was only half listening because I was tired. I was already thinking about the next thing. And I think, you know, it could be seen as a bit funny, but I think he said, I fell down when I was, you know, playing rugby. And I was like, oh, good. That's, and no. And then when I think that that's one of the most important people in my life, and I think, you know, I'm not listening. And, you know, half listening is probably worse than not listening. I think I would have been better off saying, I haven't got time right now. So I guess that's my invitation is, and maybe that's another part, Richard, of this radical. It's radical because of the potential impact it can have on our most important relationship.
Gentlemen, it has been a pleasure exploring your concept of radical listening, unpacking how intentional, focused listening can transform conversations, and indeed, as we've talked about today, relationships. For our listeners, and we've said this a number of times, working in education, we have the power to model and inspire behaviours that create inclusive, respectful and curious communities. And listening is such a key part of that journey. Today's discussion, I'm sure, will have sparked a lot of ideas that we can all take forward in our roles, some key ones at the very end there, whether we're leading, teaching or coaching. So I would encourage all of our listeners, check out this new book, Radical Listening, and we will put a link to it in the show notes. Until next time, remember to stay curious, listen deeply and join me in the next episode of Coaching and Education, where theory and good intentions meet reality.